Hello and welcome to CrypTalk. I'm Ross Sinclair for BizNews.com. I'm joined once again by Geltech's own Gaurav Nair. Geltech is an alternative investment fund manager, and if you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the description below. Just a reminder that none of this content should be taken as financial advice, and please speak to your financial advisor. Thank you for being here, Gaurav.
Thanks for having me, Ross.
So, if the world of cryptocurrency isn't controversial enough, today we're going to discuss a section of the industry which has maybe been more controversial than most, NFTs. Now, I think a lot of people look at NFTs and think of them as nothing more than low-quality pictures that get sold for ridiculous amounts of money. But what is an NFT really?
Well, the letters NFT stand for non-fungible token. And taking those one at a time, something that's fungible is like a dollar bill or a rand note. One 10 rand note is as good as another 10 rand note. That means it's fungible. And a token is just a digital object. So something like a Word document or any other type of digital object could be considered a token, really. And so when we talk about non-fungible tokens, we talk about digital objects that can't be swapped one for another. If we consider Bitcoin or Ether, one Ether is as good as any other Ether. There's nothing unique about them. However, if you imagine a digital object that is unique and that you wouldn't want to swap one for another, that's a non-fungible token. Now, with blockchains, the key technological advancement was that blockchains, they prevented double spending of digital money. So as soon as you have a digital object, like a Word document, you can just make a copy of it. Now, this is a problem when it comes to digital money, because if you make a copy of money and then I send it to you, I still have a copy that I can spend as well. And blockchains solve that problem. So when it comes to non-fungible tokens, the thing that can't be copied, who owns the token? These tokens can be pictures, they can be little snippets of music, there can be a variety of digital objects. And while you can actually copy the music or the picture and create a perfect copy of it, the thing you can't copy is who's the owner of that object. That is specified on the blockchain. But I guess, what does it mean to own a digital picture, or a JPEG, as it's called? The thing is that if I own a JPEG and you can make an exact copy of it, you still get to look at it, you still get to display it, you can put it up, etc. And so what legal rights does this really give me if I own it? And this space is currently being developed and explored. There are laws being created about it in some jurisdictions. And different NFTs have different legal rights. So some NFTs, they give the owner of the NFT the legal right to use it commercially, for example. So if I have an NFT and I also have the commercial rights of it, along with the ownership of it, then I can make merchandise of it. I can make characters and in fiction out of it, et cetera, et cetera. And I own the rights to be able to earn the profits from that. Some NFTs don't carry that, however. And so over there, it becomes more controversial. What is it that you actually own? Even if someone else can copy and display it and look at it, etc. And a good parallel is often drawn with art. So if you consider high value pieces of art, often the person that owns it is not the museum that it's displayed in. And so a lot of people get to go and look at that piece of art. And the owners may even change in the background and it may stay in the same museum being displayed. And so there's potentially something relating to just feeling good about owning that piece of art, even if you don't actually keep it for yourself and other people can see it and it's displayed publicly, etc. And there might be some kind of parallel there with just owning a NFT.
So in the case of owning the licenses, most DeFi is moving away, as the name suggests, from centralized platforms, centralized institutions. Will this allow, say, musicians to have their own ownership of their music rather than a record label or an artist to actually own their physical stuff and then sell the artwork to people individually without it going through some third party?
Those are some of the use cases which are currently being explored. Musicians are looking at scenarios where they can sell the ownership of a song to super fans, fans who are willing to spend a lot more money in order to have those rights, even if they don't have commercial rights attached to it. Sometimes there are indeed commercial rights attached to it. And a space that's currently being explored is one where royalties are automatically accrued to the musicians. And as you also described, this is a way for musicians not to go through record companies, to connect directly with their fans. And there are numerous use cases that are being developed in this way. One use case is when it comes to digital art, is that once the artist creates the art and sells it, thereafter, any further sales, the artist can get a small percentage, let's say 10% of any further sales. This allows an artist who might be relatively unknown and creates a piece of work and then later on becomes really famous. And that work is now 100 times worth 100 times more than what the artist sold it for originally. They can benefit from that increase in the price as that art changes hands. And it all happens automatically on the blockchain.
Hmm. My colleague Clive Eckstein is very excited about the future of NFTs for ticketing. So as you're saying, where you can write into the smart contract that a certain amount of the royalties go back to the artist, he's talking about in cricket games for finals, often someone will buy huge amounts of tickets and then sell them later at much higher price. And so what he's saying is people can do that, but but the original ticket seller will get a return of the royalties. Is this a use case that's possible? And would there be other ones in that sort of field of ticketing and events and concerts?
So that's a great example of a use case. Often the two use cases are combined where there'll be a piece of art and that gives a person certain rights in the real world, the right to attend certain events if they own that piece of art, to access certain spaces, have certain experiences. And then also, as you described, for ticketing. The other side of the coin is there are also NFTs that provide proof of attendance. So it could be the case that if I'm a Metallica fan and every time I go to a concert, I get proof of attendance and I get a proof of attendance token. I went to the concert in 2000. I went to the concert in 2003, etc. And then Metallica might have a concert that's only for people that have attended five of their events. And so, however, I can then transfer it and sell it. And so in that way, it'll also have some financial value. And it can be built in that these resales attract value to the original artists.
What other use cases could NFTs have in the future?
A lot of the interesting use cases are yet to be developed, but there's a lot of ideas about what these could be. So when it comes to pieces of fiction, one of the ideas which is currently being explored is where people build on certain pieces of fiction. So for example, or media. So for example, if I create a piece of music and another artist remixes it or samples it, could automatically be built in that I get royalties from the sales of their music. If you consider some of these big multimedia properties like Disney, they own Marvel, etc. It could be the case that if I create some fan fiction and I use some of the Marvel properties and I build that in, then they can also get some royalties. And that allows a big creative space. So that's another example. The third example, which is being explored a bit, but I think holds a lot of promise, is in gaming. In many games, people purchase digital objects. Their character needs a new sword or something, and they buy it. And as soon as they've bought it, the value ends there. They can't resell it. They can't do anything with it. If these objects became NFTs, then it could be the case that all of your investment into a game, whether you played and won these objects or bought them, that you could resell them at a later date. And a really good example of this are trading card games. There are big trading card games like Pokemon and a game called Magic. And people buy lots and lots of cards, and now they've gone digital. And in the real world, with the paper cards, people can resell these. But in the digital world, you can't resell them. And this exposes you to the risk that the service where you can play ends up getting stopped. You've now spent potentially thousands of dollars and you can't play anymore. However, if these digital objects were on a blockchain, then you could transfer them and get resale value. However, if the company that made the games stops supporting the service, it could open the space for someone else to say, well, as long as you own these objects, we'll create a service which can allow you to play with the objects you own in these digital card games. But I think the really interesting types of uses of NFTs are all the types of objects out there that are in the real world that could be put onto the blockchain. So a really interesting example, which also crosses over with the metaverse, is something like professional qualifications. If you consider that in South Africa, due to the weakness of the rand, potentially people from around the world would like to use our psychologists. And they can have a telephone conversation like this. However, they want to know that the person they're speaking to really is an accredited psychologist. And their license might be an NFT, which they could validate by signing a transaction using their wallet on the blockchain. And then the session could even be settled in a stablecoin, another cryptocurrency thereafter. So the design space is very new and I think very promising. I think digital art and profile pictures is really the least of the use cases. In the future, it's much more likely that NFTs will outnumber the cryptocurrencies out there. If you think about before cryptocurrencies, most of the objects you own are non-fungible. It's only the money that's fungible. And as our lives get more and more digital, it's likely that there'll be more and more digital objects, and most of the digital objects that we interact with will be non-fungible.
Would there be a potential to mix this, as you've spoken about a little bit, but between the physical world and the digital world? So could you have your home's title deed, for instance, as an NFT, have that verified, and then any other physical ownership things, a proof of ownership?
That is a possible use case where physical ownership could be then recorded on a blockchain. And it's an interesting thing because there's been a lot of skepticism about this as a use case. And recently there's been some videos of crypto skeptics talking about what would be the benefit of having a title deed as an NFT, for example. And I think what these crypto skeptics miss is that most technological innovation can't be imagined at the time that the technology appears. And one of the skeptics asked the question, transferring title deeds, how big of a portion of the GDP is that? And, you know, when Facebook first came up, if someone had said, family albums, how big of a portion of GDP is that? It would be very short-sighted. So I do believe that we'll see a lot of physical objects having their digital representations and their rights on the blockchain. But I also believe that most of the digital objects that'll be on the blockchain don't exist right now and don't have physical analogs.
I know one of the Coinbase founders said that in 3 to 5 years, 90% of NFT projects will be worthless. And with the world of NFTs being so full of pump and dump schemes and, you know, just fraudulent behavior, the reputation of non-fungible tokens has sort of been destroyed. And a lot of people might say that all NFTs are going to be useless in a few years and that they actually are worthless. What would you say to those skeptics?
Well, first, I think 90% is an optimistic projection. I suspect it'll be much more. However, I think that we can't get tainted by what we've seen. There was a lot of growth in crypto assets and a lot of new wealth created. And I think this combined to create a lot of speculation, as well as some mania type prices that we would not have expected to see. And especially those prices outrunning some of the useful applications of this. And yes, it's definitely attracted a lot of scamsters and con artists, etc. But I think that if we then paint the whole space with that brush, we end up throwing out the baby with the bathwater. I think at its core, if we say that we have this new technology, blockchains, which allow the certification of digital ownership, whether fungible or non-fungible, in a way that nothing else before that has. And simultaneously, we now have non-fungible tokens, which allow unique digital objects. I think when you think about it at that level, it clearly will have lots of uses. as we see more and more of our lives become digital. What those use cases are, there's some that we've come up with already and that's already out there in this space, but a great deal of them, I believe, are yet to be invented, and those will probably be the biggest use cases.
One of the blockchains that NFTs are sold and traded on, Solana, has recently come under a cyber attack. I think an estimated $8 million was stolen from Solana holders' wallets. What happened there?
Well, it's still busy being investigated. So some of this may not date well as the facts come out. But it seems like there wasn't any vulnerability in the actual core code of Solana. What it seems like is that there was a supply chain attack on some of the wallets that are used on mobile devices. It seems more to be more prevalent on iOS devices, but also has affected Android devices, and specifically affecting a few wallets: the Phantom wallet, the Slope wallet, and the Trust wallet. So these are hot wallets in that they are on devices that are connected to the internet at all times. So what is a supply chain attack? A supply chain attack is a category of attacks where, in the process of a program being created, somewhere along the line, potentially malicious code was put into these wallets. It could be in what they call libraries. And when someone is building a wallet, they take the code out of a library that already exists. And that could be the case. And hence, numerous wallets have the same vulnerability. And it looks like these wallets reveal the private key associated with them. So to recap, normally a wallet has a public key, which, if we compare it to a bank account, is like the account number. And then the private key is the PIN to be able to access it. So a lot of users, they started finding that their Solana wallets had been drained of funds. And without them necessarily having interacted with any specific protocols, without them having clicked on any suspicious links, etc. And it seems like this is because malicious actors had been able to gain their private keys and now spend the currency without their approval.
So it's not a fault of the blockchain. It's more a fault of, once again, sort of other aspects of the world. Geltech basket, which includes Solana, has had a promising month after the unfortunate crypto crash that happened recently. The basket's up around 33%, I believe. What's been the driver of this growth?
Well, there are two major drivers. The first driver is the macro context. The biggest thing affecting all financial markets now is the US inflation numbers, and hence the Federal Reserve reacting to that and raising interest rates. And even though the Federal Reserve raised interest rates by 75 basis points about a month ago now, actually more than that was expected by the market. And so the fact that the Federal Reserve raised less than that resulted in the market rally. Normally, when the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, the cost of money increases, and hence all other investments are more expensive to invest in, and they do less well. And the more risky an asset is, the worse it does. Crypto assets being seen as the most risky. So it had already been priced in a higher rate increase, and hence they all went up. The other major thing has been something crypto specific. The Ethereum blockchain, which is the biggest smart contract chain, the busiest chain as well, and the second biggest by market capitalization behind Bitcoin, is hoping to undergo an event called the merge. And the merge is where the Ethereum will change the way it works from the current way of mining, which involves a lot of energy, to validating, which uses 99% less energy. And this merge has been talked about for many years and planned, and the developers working on this have put it off many, many times. However, it seems like the end is in sight. And there's been some test mergers that have happened, and as these have been happening, they've been going through without any issues, and so it seems like the merge is likely to happen. And one of the core developers had put a date in the calendar saying that he expects the merge to happen sometime in September, the 19th of September. And with that date in the calendar, there was a bit of a rally around that. and the Ethereum price started to grow. And as it was growing, the other cryptocurrencies also went up in sympathy with that, in correlation with that.
Will the merge actually potentially increase the value of Ethereum or bring it down, or what will happen to the price? Why are people trying to boost are they expecting there to be a jump?
Well, many traders have speculated that there will be an increase in the price, but it all depends on how the merge goes, actually. While the Ethereum developers are very careful and they've not been held to any timeline, if they think there's a risk, they just keep pushing it out. There is a risk that the merge doesn't go well. There's been numerous analogies. One is that it's like trying to change the engine of a plane while it's flying. So the blockchain's not going to go down, and they're going to change the way it works while it's doing that. One of the key things that is going to happen with the merge is that the rate of issuance of new Ethereum being created out of nothing is going to drop by 90%. And so if you consider all the miners out there that are mining Ethereum, they keep getting Ethereum and they have to keep selling it to pay for their energy bills, et cetera. And now that's going to reduce by 90%. And running a validation computer as opposed to a mining computer is much cheaper. So the validators won't even have to sell all of the Ethereum they get, even though it's going to be 90% less. And so the expectation is that there'll be much less Ethereum available for sale. And as we know, with supply and demand dynamics, when supply reduces, then the price could go up. The other interesting thing about the merge is that once we move from mining to validation, then you can stake your Ether and earn an interest rate. And so a lot of traders expect that there'll be demand for Ether by people that want to earn interest. They'll buy Ether and stake it in order to earn an interest rate. So if what these traders expect to happen does happen, that should be good for the Ethereum price. The much lower issuance, the demand for an interest-bearing security, and so the Ethereum price may go up. And some of the expectations are that it could go past all-time highs.
Well, thank you so much again, Gaurav, for taking the time.
Thank you, Ross.